You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
This is the CRM Archaeology Podcast. It's the show where we pull back the veil of cultural resources management, archaeology, and discuss the issues that everyone is concerned about. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to the annual Christmas episode shopping list for archaeologists. This is CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 323. And joining me today is Bill in Northern California.
Hello.
I sound a little grinchy, Bill. Okay. And Doug in Scotland.
Hey, everyone.
Hello. Well, I don't know if you can tell by the voices, I'm a real Christmas person. I love Christmas. So we'll see. I think Bill and Doug could take some persuading, and I don't know. You usually enjoy our shopping list episode, right?
Yeah, I do. It's been a long time since we did one, though. Yeah. So I'm glad. I like Christmas as well.
Yeah. So for those that haven't heard our annual one, which sounds like, I guess I don't remember all the years mushed together. So, but yeah, sounds totally. Like we maybe skipped one last year, but we just go over things as an archaeologist that we think would be a really nice gift. So why don't we go ahead and start? And let's see, have Bill or Doug, do you guys have some ideas of, and I think it's good to just kind of do the good quintessential gifts that maybe we've mentioned before, but for those that haven't heard our episodes, our shopping list episodes, it's helpful. Do you guys have your go-tos?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked about that because I was thinking before the podcast about things that I want for Christmas that I'll use in the field. But then I started to think about what are the things that I always use that I've been using for a very long time. And so one of the things that I know I've been using for a lot of years, and I've written about it before on my blog, is this clipboard called a weather writer. I know that for a long time I was pushing for paperless archaeology, and I've worked with folks with a company that makes apps for archaeologists, and they made one, and we had it, and we used it in the field, and it was fine. It just didn't do like actually what I wanted it to do. And I've talked with Chris Webster, the show host that was on here for many years too, about other solutions. And I've even used iPads out in the field, but paper still exists. And I mean, I don't really know a way around it. And now that I'm working with other people who are with the state historic preservation offices and stuff, they're telling me that some CRM companies are like handing in their data as proprietary, just files that they can't be read on any, you know, Microsoft Office thing or Adobe Acrobat files or whatever. So they're just handing this data over that's coded in their company's app software, and they don't know what to do with it. It's like all this data that's coming from proprietary. So they print off the site form, they give them the UTMs for the locations, the report, all that stuff, right? But their notes, the actual info of like where they were at, the constantly running GPS and stuff that you can get with an app, that's just being handed over as just like a proprietary file
that
doesn't have any kind of way to open, right? And so I started to think about that as I talked to more state historic preservation offices and realized like our situation with software at the state level is out of control. Like some states, you know, regions of California, you're still going in and looking at paper maps and like scribing on paper to see where site locations are at and stuff. And then there's places like Washington State where I worked. And once you've passed your background check and you're a professional archaeologist, you can get access, you know, for a fee to all of the digitized sites in the whole state. And so I'm like, you know, it's spread all across, and we have a lot of problems with states that have coded their stuff in ancient softwares that there's no devices that can even read it. I mean, unless we get like a revolution in state level data curation, paper is still going to exist like for as long as I'm alive. And so the clipboard, the weather writer that I've been talking about for a long time, I feel like it's better than the old metal one for several reasons. Like it has its own plastic case. I think the Velcro is always a problem because dirt gets in it and it sucks actually. And then
metal's a problem. If you're in a cold area, that's not fun to hold on to.
Well, the problem with the metal one also is that water gets in through the side seam and the hinge and stuff. Yeah. And so if it's raining or if right. you put it down and it's dewy or something like that, water can get in on the paper. But with the Weather Writer, I mean, it's not 100% waterproof, but seriously, you can write it while it's raining or drizzling. You can read your paper maps. You can, a lot of times we'll just put the iPad in the Weather Writer case, even though the iPad is weather resistant. So all my digitized forms and all that stuff are safe in there. And it's small. It's not very heavy. So like I've been using those clipboards for a long time. I teach a class on field archaeology. And so I got the like affordable Amazon version. I don't know how durable they are in the long term or whatever, but they do a good job for students because I need like 20 of them. But if you're an archaeologist and you know you're out there, getting the one that is, you know, the $20 actual Weather Writer made in the UK clipboard, I mean, that's one thing that I still keep using. And when the plastic gets all brittle and breaks, I get another one. And they last like 5 or 7 years. So that's one item I've been using for like 15 years now, at least.
I think that's a great, it can, even for like a graduation gift, that's an excellent practical gift.
Yeah, it's pretty affordable.
So one of mine for this year, probably going a little bit above and beyond like the normal sort of price range, just what a bit of a playoff of what Bill was talking about and, you know, like quality of computers and, well, you're talking tablets, but sort of something on the radar and maybe it might not be quite like for this year, but somewhat in the future is like a framework laptop. Have you guys heard of those at all?
Yeah, I have, but what's up with them?
I have not.
I've seen the videos. Is it actually, and can you really, well, go ahead and tell folks.
Yeah, so as everyone probably knows at this point, because laptops have been a thing for a couple of decades now, you know, you have a laptop and you have it for a couple of years and then wear and tear happens. And my experience has always been like the hinges, like except for like one or two brands, like after a while, the hinges start to give out. And then like you go to open it one day and like you've ripped your laptop in two or it's like part of it's hanging off. And I mean, yeah, it feels good. You feel like the Hulk, but like also you've
except
just like,
have to work.
Yeah. You've also just ruined your laptop. And then like, no matter what you do, like I've never, like I've gone to like lab, you know, computer repair shops. I'm like, yeah, is there a way to get like new hinges or, you know, basically it's come down to like one, they either don't have the part and they'll never get it. Like that part doesn't exist anymore. Or two, they're like, yeah, so for like $2,000, we can replace the hinges. And you're like, what? It's basically the price of like a new laptop. And so you end up like wasting through. Yeah,
I've never had that happen. For me, it's the keyboard or the or the key, that press pad.
Yeah, so it's, for me, it's the hinges. But yeah, like the, or you end up with the, well, I hear for a lot of people is like the keypad, you know, or the, you know, the keyboard where suddenly like your enter button no longer works, or like the space button, or like the letter F or something like that, or E. And so and of course it's a laptop, so basically you're screwed because you've now have like one broken key on your, you know, on your laptop, but it'll probably be like a very important one and you basically have to replace the whole laptop. And so like framework laptops, it's like a relatively new company. I think they're 4 or 5 years old. And the idea is they've made a modular laptop. So like if your keyboard stops working or breaks, or you actually just want a new one, you can actually change out that part yourself, and you don't actually have to be like a technical expert and deal with like, you know, tiny little screws and all that sort of stuff trying to do it yourself. And so you can replace like the RAM, you can replace the screen, basically the whole bit of the computer. Each part is modular and replaceable. So in the future, if say your hinges break or stop working, you can actually just replace that part or the screen and have it work. And so, yeah, I mean, a bit on the more expensive side, because you are buying like a modular laptop. So, you know, if you really love someone for Christmas, this could be it. But also, like, it could be one of those things where, like, you know, if they people start, if this really becomes a thing, then, you know, for a cheaper thing, you're like, oh, you need, let me get you like
a portion of it.
Yeah. Let me get you like 32 gigs of RAM, and so that you never have to worry about like your tabs freezing on your browser or anything like that. So
That's a great idea.
Can you upgrade that stuff too, like RAM, and can you put another processor in and stuff?
Yeah. So there's a the specs again. It's a I really hope it takes off. So they have a couple of different models. So they have like a 13 inch to like the size of like the screen. That by saying that, that's like the screen size and like a 16 inch. And then like, there's all sorts of like, you know, you could change out the CPU, you can change out various graphics, you can increase the memory, you know, you can increase the RAM and all that stuff. So yeah, it's a way of like keeping it going. And like at the minute, like it's somewhat limited on your choice. Like it's more choices than you'll ever get from any other producer, but there is still like a limit. Like you can't like choose a really high-end CPU or graphics card that you want to put in if it's something like that. But for the most part, you have some options there. You can change things out. And yeah, you, instead of having to like toss the laptop every couple of years, you might be able to like have an heirloom laptop that you pass down to your children.
Well, yeah, the problem with these, like the way that all the other ones that we have, you know, the Apple and other folks, they'll weld all that stuff to the motherboard. And so there is no like taking the processor out, or they might leave you a spot in a laptop. Maybe you can upgrade the RAM or something like that, but like you're stuck. You're kind of stuck with what you got. And then when it comes to the monitor, you're definitely stuck. And so I know what you're talking about, because sometimes you get those lines, like the pixels start to die. Or you crack them. If a toddler, for some example, somehow stands on your laptop, it will crack it. So, you know, those are all realities that could possibly happen. And you're done. You're right. It's like a whole laptop's gone. Just e-waste right then.
Yeah. So that's my recommendation, actually. Okay. Is like, right. It is.
That's pretty sweet.
It's like a sort of mid to like, so it's not going to be a high range, like gaming, like ultimate laptop, and it's not gonna be like, they do have like a Chromebook, so for the lower end, but it's not gonna be like your cheap like $100, $150 like little tiny things that I wouldn't recommend those anyways because they're pretty crap, but like, you know, it's gonna be a nice it's for what most people use, it'll be a nice mid-range laptop that you can potentially change out stuff, and so, you know, stuff happens. Yeah. I know. Like when Bill was saying, like toddler standing on your laptop.
So that's, it may not
break.
Thing.
Yeah, it may not break it every time, but 100%. If you've had a toddler, they have stood on your laptop, and you have freaked out at some point. Like,
yeah, exactly.
What? No, off.
Yeah.
No, well, along those lines for digital, I'll add before we go to the next segment, my go-to that I think it's a relatively inexpensive gift for somebody that you're closer to, because it's like $150. So, and one thing I did want to say about the laptop. So for those, if you're an archaeologist or you're not an archaeologist, but you're the friend or the love of an archaeologist who's, or a family member who's looking for a gift, as far as, you know, make sure that you ask or you find out from your favorite archaeologist if they're getting a computer from their company. So, you know, just something to think about. Because if you get a computer from your company, then that's a whole other thing. And so, some companies will just give a laptop to those if you're an as needed. But just before you make that expenditure. The other is, maybe you're getting them a laptop that's just for their own personal use, so that your favorite archaeologist does not have to use their work computer for something other than work. So now my digital favorite gift to get, I should say, would be a multiple screens that you can put on, that are portable, that you can put on your computer. Whoa. I love that. They're becoming more and more popular, but they are definitely a go-to for me. It's very difficult to write something with one screen. And so the ones that you can get that are more compact, you could actually use on an airplane, especially if you don't have somebody sitting next to you. Or, but
I was
going to
say, are you just taking up everyone's space with all your screens?
If you have no one next to you, then you can do it. And you're sitting at the window. But for the most part, in the hotel, it's such an awesome I do it in the truck. So there's projects where I might be, you know, working away on the project, the report for that specific project in the field while everybody's doing their work. And because we're having to turn it around quickly. And for me, there you can't do it without multiple screens. It's so difficult. So these are so great. They usually they're around 100, 150. They connect to your monitor. They have separate, there's different levels and they seem to be getting better and better. The one I have is a little heavy, but it works for me and it just connects. You expand, it has kind of springs on it. It claps onto the monitor of your computer and then you have these other, and then with the wires you connect and you have these three monitors all of a sudden. Or three screens. It is amazing.
I did not know this existed.
Yes, it is. I'm telling you, Bill, it's a game changer. It's awesome. And they're not that expensive. And for, let's say, you don't have to get them the top one. Get them one for $100. And if it doesn't work, you know, for a long period of time, I've had it for 2 years and it still works great. So to me, it's like, and when people see you, they're like, whoa, that's so cool.
I know. I'm like looking at it online and I'm like, oh my God, what? If I saw that on a plane, I'd be like, are we in the Matrix? Are you?
Right.
Are you navigating Neo? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. It's very, but I'm telling you, it's huge. Can't you see? Like, doesn't it bother you?
It looks rad, but
yeah.
Yes, I get it, but it's like, whoa. I get it. I kind of want it too. I want to see what's going to happen. I want it.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. We'll be right back. All right. We're doing our annual What Should I Buy for My Favorite Archaeologist? This segment, we are going to be talking about the gifts that you can give below $50. So I know that Doug had a go-to.
Yeah, let's hear
this
it.
This is my go-to. Like, I've probably said this in like every episode. So for like 10 years, if you've been listening for that long, you know exactly what I'm going to say. Mitten gloves. They are absolutely like essential for like any cold weather working.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's so essentially to describe it, it's imagine like fingerless gloves where you essentially have that, you know, the normal glove and usually you have the tops of your digits free. But on top of it, it has a fold-over mitten compartment. So usually they'll have like some sort of clip. Like sometimes they're magnetic. Sometimes they're just, you know, Velcro, standard stuff like that. I've seen some with like buttons. Any way you can hook it. So you can basically flip off the mitten part. So you have your little fingers there. So if you need to type things in or like do some delicate work or write with a pencil or a pen or whatever, you have that ability. But then you can just easily flip over the mittens. And the great thing about that is like, instead of having to like take off your full glove and get your hands like freezing cold, essentially you go to the, like between a mitten, which for anyone who doesn't know, a mitten is way warmer than gloves. So you're heating one air compartment. And so you have the heat going between your fingers. Whereas if you have like gloves, you have five separate little compartments and basically, it all goes into physics. It's about surface area, yada. Yeah. But mittens are way warmer. And so this gives you the advantage of not having to fully take off your mitten if you need to actually do work, which usually you have to do something. You know, you're writing up a fines bag, you're writing up the form, you need to type something in on the tablet or laptop. Like, you're going to have to do it. GPS, total station, whatever it is, you're going to need it. And like this keeps your hand relatively warm when you need to use your fingers. And it's just so much warmer. I always go for like the heavy duty, like ones where they're advertising. They're like, do you want to go to the Arctic? These are the ones for you. Because like, well, also get like waterproof ones as well. Because like if you get, you can see ones that are sort of like fun for like kids, sort of mitten gloves. And they'll be like, you know, wool, which is not too bad. But like, again, like you're going to be out there for like 8 hours, usually probably in some sort of rain or snow or something like that. And basically you need something that's waterproof. So my recommendation is always go like the top line, you know, explore to the North Pole sort of style that are like waterproof. And I don't know, I've had mine so I've actually only had two pair in my entire life. And that's been 20 years. So I managed to, like, one lasted like 16, 17 years. I'm on my second pair, but you go like that and they are amazing. And then also, like, yeah, you can just use them outside of work as well. But that's my, like, cheap sort of.
That's yeah,
and
one.
Usually
that's
you get sweet. Them. You get them for like $20 or $30 US, and then like, I don't know, like 15-20 pounds UK, and they're amazing. So like a nice stocking stuffer. I have another thing I'd do, but I'd like to hear you guys' first. Your sort of cheaper ones, cheaper gifts.
You want to go first, Heather?
Sure. So
okay,
my go-to, and I have this dream to make custom ones for my team someday, but I just have never done it. I've always thought in my head it would be a great thing because I worked my way through, and you're like, what the heck are you talking about, Heather? But I worked my way through upholstery class so I could make these, and I'll tell you in a second what they are. I worked my way through graduate school teaching upholstery, excuse me, and all types of upholstery, boat, auto, antique. And so this is something like I have in my head that I want to make for everybody, but 5-gallon bucket cushions.
Whoa. I didn't even know this existed.
Yes.
Oh, you're saying you're going to make that. You're going to make, that's right.
No,
they don't exist.
They do exist. They actually do exist. But I thought it'd be fun to do like a team one where your company's on it or whatever. There's all different types. Actually, it's pretty cool. So I thought I had like this, you know, new invention that I thought, you know, I had made one. It was kind of, you know, it was a prototype, but I had made one and it was great. And I thought I was the only one who thought of this, which is, you know, silly. But then I saw there's lots of options, and you'd think it'd be like construction workers, right? It's actually, believe it or not, people that play pond hockey. So my husband went to the pond hockey world championships, and they have these cool things where they have buckets with the tops that are really nice, and they're vinyl and they're spongy. They're very comfortable. And then they also have ones where it's a bench, and the bench has, it's just a bench, and then it has a connection, like some piece of wood underneath so that it fits nicely on top of 2 5-gallon or 3 5-gallon tank buckets, depending on how many people you want to sit on the bench. And then it's padded. And so it's this really great portable bench for playing hockey. And so these, I'm telling you, there's all different types. You can get just a regular pad, just a little foam memory pad. You can get an all-in-out one that I have, it's actually, you know, a pad with vinyl on top. Then they actually have ones that are hard plastic that you can put. There's some that are foldable, so you can just stick it in your backpack. So there's all different types. Well, by the way, we're going to be putting links for all these gifts. There's one that is a thick foam cushion that is even smaller, and it's like a little kidney shape. So it's just enough for your bum to be, you know, to be protected from the kind of the sticky parts of the things that stick up in the bottom of a 5-gallon tank. So anyway, to me, it's a really great, they range from between $10 and even $50. Those are the ones that are a little bit more fancy, but you can get something like that as cheap as $10.
Nice. That's a good score.
Man, this sounds like the gift that you didn't know you needed until just now.
Yes.
I super want it now. I was looking it up while we're recording, and it looks rad. I want it.
Yeah. I mean, how many times you're sitting and you're convincing yourself that you're not getting poked, and you're not that this is comfortable. Yeah. It's better than sitting on the ground and getting whatever ants and stuff. It's, yeah, to me, it's a game changer.
It's never better than sitting on the ground. And I kind of carry like one of those super cheap grocery store folding chairs a lot of times. Uh-huh. And then like if it breaks, whatever, and if I don't want it, I just leave it in the hotel, or, you know, it's not a big deal if I can't take it back with me. But this is even better because we always have 5-gallon buckets.
Yes.
And so if you can also, those of us who weigh a little bit more than the average person, break through the bottom when we turn them upside down. And finally, you can't carry your stuff in the bucket if you turn it upside down. So the covers are awesome. This is great. I didn't even know this existed.
It has like, it's hard. So the top is hard. So it does give the 5-gallon bucket a lot more sturdiness. So Yeah, it's great. And then another option for seat is those tripod. Those are great. You can get them at REI, but they actually tend to be more expensive. But they're nice because you can strap them onto the side of your backpack. I really like this. I like this one better, putting it on the 5-gallon bucket, especially if you can convince your company to buy a few of them.
Yeah, that's definitely a good idea. It seems like companies would buy those. Okay, I got a couple that I can recommend widely. The old Rhino Ruler fiberglass metric ruler. So the one that just comes out like an accordion. So first of all, those things are super useful, and it's hard to find metric rulers in the United States. So that's always a thing anyway. Second of all, the retracting, what are those things called where you pull them out? The measuring tape. Measuring tape gets destroyed from rain, rust, and dirt. And so measuring tape is super expensive, but this thing is only like $19 if you get it on forestry suppliers, and it lasts a long time. And as long as you don't pull it, get it caught on something and pull it, try to stretch it apart and pop the hinges on it. It's this rad ruler that every segment is basically 10 centimeters. And even when it breaks, you can break those little segments off. They're good for drawing. They're good for other kinds of measurements and stuff like that because it's a little centimeter ruler. But when you have it in its whole thing, it's like 2 meters long. Or no, 1 meter long. No, it's 2 meters long. That's right. It's 6 feet. Okay, so that's the one that I would say is my stocking stuffer. You know, definitely hook it up. The other one I say is a good stocking stuffer is just the plain classic moleskin with no lines, notebook. It's black. You know, it's sad. I can't find it here on the Moleskin website. But on Amazon, which I've been getting them in bulk, basically, I keep all my notes in these little black notebooks. A lot of times I don't write them in the laptop because, you know, it's just easier to write. It's easier to draw. And once again, going back to the whole electronics thing, what am I going to do with an electronic file if I don't have my stuff with me? But a notebook I can very easily carry with me. And so those things are about $35. It's a little more expensive, but you know, those are also great notebooks to give folks that work in the field. And especially if you have it in a little leather case or something like that, it looks really great. And what's best of all is once you've filled all those out over time, you have this whole shelf full of all these different projects. The paper's better than the write in the rain, but it's more fragile. So if you actually take it to the field, it's going to get destroyed if it gets wet and everything. So maybe this might not be a field thing, but for doing research at the library or writing down things about artifacts, things that you actually want to, you know, remember, definitely notes when you're in meetings and stuff, you've got your own archive of what was said. And it kind of looks cool over the years that you have all these different black notebooks that are full of your notes over the last few years and they're dated.
I love that. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And it's such a great, it's so funny because Andrew, I think, you know, those that listen regularly know that Andrew was my first professor and we were going through some old notes. I was at Moore Park College a couple of weeks back and we were going through the old field notes and this is 20 years ago. And I'm looking through and we were able to find my old notebook and it was really funny to read back and it was some great memories, you know, and it's nice for your family too, especially, you know, if you have children and to pass that on there, if you write notes in a way that's personal, not only just what you're seeing in the field, but it's, and we could talk about that on another segment, why field notes should be more than just numbers, right? And observations, but they are not just because they're fun to read, but there's other reasons we could talk about on another segment, like I said, but it was really neat. It was fun to see. And I think it's great. It would be great to have them all look very nice, you know, organized and had the same look. I think that'd be great. Before we go on to the next segment, let's see if we can squeeze out a couple more cheap ones. I think, and I know gift cards are not all that exciting, but I think gift cards to something like Patagonia, an REI, or some kind of store of your choice that sells field clothes, I think it's really an excellent choice because then your favorite archaeologist gets to pick what they want. Yeah. And you don't have to worry about getting the color they want or the type they want. But the reason this is important is because clothing is important, like the sunscreen, the material that is sun reflective or whatever. There's lots of different pieces of clothing that really make our job out in the field more comfortable and safer. So I think that those are always a great go-to. And
yeah. Well, along that sort of REI one, so these technically are going to be like under 50, but they're like under 50 per pair, which makes it seem very expensive, but socks. And this is like cold weather, warm weather. So I go with REI, like they're, again, like I'm hiking Mount Everest style sock, which is like a wool something else hybrid, probably some sort of synthetic. But there is some natural, because every time I wash them, they like shrink and you have to sort of pull them on really tight and then they loosen up. But like, it's going to seem ridiculously expensive compared to like, you know, you just go on like Amazon and get like a 12 pack of socks for like, I don't know, $6 or $5. I know the States have gotten more expensive, but like something along those range. And then you're like, what? I'm going to pay like $20, $25 for one pair of socks. But it is so worth it. Like proper cold weather socks. Like, so again, the parts, if you're trying to stay warm, it's your farthest extremities. So your hands, your head, and your feet are the most important parts to keep warm. And that'll keep the rest of your, that'll keep your core warm if you can keep your extremities warm. And so like proper socks for like cold weather, you will thank me like 100 times over.
Yeah.
They are the most important things. Don't get like the cheap. I mean, it used to be like, you know, you got your 12 pack of like cotton, but you know, I mean, cotton's super expensive now, but like, you know, it's some sort of polyester. Don't go with that. Go with a nice pair, even if it's like you're spending $15 or $20 on just a single pair of socks. It is absolutely amazing. And then the reverse, warm weather socks. So getting like proper good socks that basically pull the sweat and gunk off of your feet, you will stay so much cooler, especially, you know, if you have to be wearing like steel cap boots and stuff like that, and, you know, something that's quite heavy, quite thick, which, you know, in most cases in archaeology, you'll have to no matter what. So like having proper socks that will keep you cool, absolutely amazing. And again, like, so I'd say REI, or even just going to a running store. So like you know, long distance running store, they'll have like thin socks that are specifically made for hot weather to like essentially pull all the sweat off of your feet and pull it to the outside of the sock. So then it evaporates. Yeah. It keeps you so cool. Again, like, oh man, instead of investing in like one of those little sort of tiny little fans that sprinkle water or something like that, which is also a cool gift,
I'd put that in there too. But they get destroyed ultra fast. I mean, I see the students just blow through those and then they're like, yeah, welcome to the Virgin Islands. Like that thing gets eaten. You're just going to have to get used to it, bro. Like it's just going to eat those little devices.
Yeah. I would have to say like a great pair of socks are going to be comparable.
Yeah.
And like, when you're actually buying quality socks, it's not like you're throwing them out like every year. I mean, I've gotten some of those that have lasted, like, I use those like not just for work. I use that. It's like my day to day. I hate being cold. I live in a cold place. Well, not too cold of a place, but it's still miserable and wet and cold. And I like wear those. Like I got a week's pair of socks. You know, it was over like $100 I spent on that. But it's been worth it. I've had them for like 5 years and I have not been cold for the last 5 years. They're amazing.
For the warm weather ones, Costco has this Puma pack that's got like 12 pairs in it or something like that. They're black or gray, which is good because then they don't look like trash when they get all muddy. And they have the ventilated top and then they also have a thicker bottom. So that's a good choice too. And it's not that expensive. It's like, you know, $20 at most, I think, or maybe even less for 12 pairs.
It's a weird one where like actually going for quality on this will probably save you money in the long run.
Yeah, probably.
Just because like, you know, you get those cheap socks and like they might last a field season, if not, before you have like multiple holes in them and they've just gotten gunky. Or like, I think everyone's experienced the one where you've sort of peeled off your sock and then it could still stand up because it's like this hard, crusty sand and sweat sort of mixture. Yeah. And then sometimes you're just like, I'm just going to toss the socks.
Yeah. That's trash. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll just piggyback off of this and then we'll go on to the next segment. But so my son is in the Army and his main thing is socks. Like he wants socks for gifts. And the one Darn Tough, it's an actual brand called Darn Tough out of Vermont. They're very good. A lot of people in the military like those. And so there's different, they have various types. They have like ones you can get that have different kinds of designs on them too, but they're made for rucks. So if you don't know what a ruck is, well, I think most people know what a ruck is, but it obviously
it's called surveying in archaeology.
Yeah, exactly.
They it's call it ruck. We call it like work.
Exactly. It's obviously going to be very, you know, it's very tough on socks. So that we'll put a link to those in there. And they actually have their thing open and they have a holiday sale.
Right? The other thing that's beautiful about Darn Tough is if anything happens, they take them back.
Yep. Yep.
So like, even if you normally rip them because you were doing archaeology, they'll either fix them or send you another pair.
Right. So what you're looking for is merino wool. That's what they're made out of. And I know that my son was like, whatever you can get that says it's merino wool is usually a good start when you're looking for a good sock. So with that, we'll see you in segment 3. Welcome back to episode 323, CRM Archaeology Podcast. And this is our annual archaeologist holiday gift list. We have handled basically our first segment. We talked about kind of the medium grade gifts of the things that we can't do without, very practical gifts. And actually, I think the second two was more of your stocking stuffers, gifts under 20 or 50, some even under 10. So now this is, let's see, funds are unlimited. There's no restrictions. This segment, we're going to talk about what is your heart's desire. So personally, we're talking about what we really want, not necessarily.
Yeah, no limit all star. Here we go. No limit.
Somebody else.
Let's do it.
And also, I want to say we have, in case you're kind of curious, we've changed voices. Doug couldn't make our third segment, so we have Andrew joining us for the biggest.
That's right. Here I am.
He now has under his contract. We have to pay him per segment. So
we're too cheap.
We're going on the cheap. Yeah. One segment. All right.
Right.
Okay. And so money is no object. Wow. Just we're going wild here.
Who wants to
go first? Yeah. Who wants to go first?
Andrew.
We're going to choose. Yeah. Andrew, let's hear from you. Yeah. I know there's probably going to be a vehicle in the near future. I'm not a fortune teller, but.
Okay. You're like a genius. How did you fool me in that way?
Well, I am a doctor.
You are a doctor, Dan. Good to be a fellow doctor. Doctor, how are you, doctor? Good to see you. So, I thought I would just talk car-centric for the whole thing, for Merry Christmas for your car, from the small to the tall. So since I wasn't around for the first bit, I'll just touch on some car stuff because I was literally looking at this stuff for myself, like in the last 48 hours. So car-centric stuff. On the small side, I'm like, get a tire pressure gauge for that person you love. And specifically as I go through any of these, good quality ones, man. It's easy to find a crappy tire pressure gauge, but they're kind of hard to find like a good one. So if you have somebody who, you know, is in CRM, drives their car a lot, which is most of us, and you give them like a really nice tire pressure gauge. I'm not saying it's the greatest like present for your spouse on Christmas, you know, but for the friend in CRM, I think those are great. Any kind of toolkit stuff that they may need, again, good quality tools. It's so hard to find something like a quality lug nut wrench. And I know it's not super sexy, but man, when you are broken down and you need to change your tire and you have a crappy lug nut wrench, it really sucks. I know from experience, the lug nut wrench itself actually bent and broke. So you couldn't get the nuts off the wheel. Also, you know, other stuff that goes with cars like first aid kits, any other tools, you know, wrenches, this kind of stuff, as long as they're good quality. I even thought, dude, this is how far down the rabbit hole of cardom I am. That if somebody bought me a box of like 6 quarts of oil, I'd be like, thank you. Especially if the oil was the right kind. Hey, some Quaker State 530. in quartz. Thank you. Because most of us in CRM archaeology, we have old cars that burn oil and you're always like forgetting. You're like, crap. So, and then finally, for the money is no object, obviously a car, buying a car, buy something.
All right, here we go. What is CRM. This? What's this one?
So no, money, no object. I would go two layers, like used. Money's like always an object for me, but I would go like a really like used, a really good quality, like Nissan Xterra. Again, you wanted to go a couple years back. Those are good, dude. Like,
yeah, I know. But no wonder you're going to need the oil and stuff like that because they're older, though.
Yeah, exactly. Just,
you get the stuff that comes with an old car, but they are rad.
Right. Those are great. But new cars, it's funny. We've talked about this on the show forever, but money is no object. Of course, you're going to buy a Toyota Land Cruiser. I mean, come on. You're going to buy one. I mean, in reality, they're like 60 grand for the cheap one. But for what they are and just how they look, like if I was a multimillionaire, I would just lean into the cliche because a Toyota Land Cruiser is the number one most cliche vehicle that you can buy. In 2025, right? And even the new one harkens back to the old ones. So even the dashboard looks like it's from 1979 as best as it can. So
I thought you'd say like Jeep Wrangler or something like that. Or like
Toyota Land Cruiser.
What about the new Broncos? They look rad.
Oh, they do. So see, this gets into my car nerddom. Like the Bronco, in reality, both of those cars are a bit of a swing and a miss. I would go Land Cruiser because you need to go to the base of archaeology cliche and be like, what looks like you're going to hunt rhinoceroses? And a Toyota Land Cruiser looks like you're hunting rhinoceroses.
So then I guess I have the age old question for people who are into the whole overlanding, you know, Japanese Lexus GXs versus Land Cruiser.
Oh, so in the...
Because aren't they both on the same like platform and stuff?
Both the same car.
One has more luxury. Car. Okay, so the Lexus has more luxury. Why would you choose the Land Cruiser just because you want the shape?
Okay, yes. So if we're going pure cliche, it has to say Land Cruiser on the thing. But in reality, the Lexus is sometimes the better buy, actually. And it's not because you need leather seats and all that shit. It's the other stuff that comes with it. Sometimes it has like a better engine or this kind of thing. It's the same car, but
the luxury cars plummet in like resale value, like really fast. Whereas everyone knows the word Land Cruisers. So they'll hold on to it.
Exactly.
People think, a 2025 or a 2020 or a 2015, 10-year-old Land Cruiser or a Lexus. Oh, that's just junk. Yeah. We don't care. But what they don't know is if they mod it up a little bit,
you're exactly right. I had a friend who did exactly this and he got out for such short money. It was crazy. Yeah. Now, a lot of people know the trick now, but still, the Lexus is the sleeper hit.
Well, now everyone listening knows the trick too.
It's too late. Yeah. But that's where I'd go. Money's no object. A Toyota Land Cruiser with we're going to go every cliche. We're putting like the stupid roof rack on it. We're putting the stupid snorkel on it. Parked next to one of these yesterday. Right.
In California where there's no water.
Yes. Yes. And because there's no water, you don't even really need four-wheel drive ever either. But so it had everything. Oh, the little ladder on the back. We want the ladder. I want the ladder so I can walk up the ladder to get to my roof rack. There you go. Oh, and I want an axe. I want an axe on the side.
It's not even a shovel, just an axe. No, I want an axe.
Just like one of those fireman axes. It needs to be red, too. Oh, I need a red fireman's axe.
Wow. And you want it to be painted so it says Jurassic Park on it, too.
Totally.
So.
I need some sort of vaguely camouflage, like Desert Storm era. All right. You know?
Yeah, I get it. Okay.
Yeah, cool. You know what I'm saying.
All right. So what's your footage?
Yeah, of course, like we're talking about the things that are, out of reach, right? Okay, so money's no object here. First of all, I'm a backpack nerd and like backpacks. And the problem is I'm too tall. So I see packs that are sweet on short people and then I get them and they hurt my back. So I guess because I can afford medical care, high quality medical care for when my back hurts, I totally would get this canvas backpack that's from the Indiana Jones, the most recent one that they had. Oh man, I'm blanking on the movie name too, but you can get it from Dial of Destiny, Frost River Geologist Pack. The thing looks sweet. Of course, if you put any gear in, it's going to hurt your back. It's tiny too, so it's just going to be up on my shoulders and it's going to kill me every minute. But the thing looks totally rad. There's other packs from Frost River that rule too that would look great. They're all beefy canvas, so once again, they're heavy and pretty much useless for the actual field. You'd never want to take these out there because they would get destroyed. But check it out because they look totally awesome. So I guess like if you're shorter or you can handle, you know, these kind of backpacks and money's no object, like that's the kind of thing that I would, you know, definitely up your the way that you look as far as being an archaeologist. When it comes to vehicles, man, I'm torn, right? So I still think I love the whole off-road thing, but doing archaeology, we almost never go out where it's rugged, right? Like it's rare. And if we do, we rent a Jeep Wrangler, beat the crap out of it, and then give it back to the rental place. And like, I don't know why it's missing its stabilizer bar. What? Like, I don't know, you know, what? Whoops, whoa, it had two bumpers. So yeah, we just give these crippled vehicles back and we just hammer them. So most of the work that we ever really do is not off-roading, right? So I actually would go for the like Ford Transit Trail, just totally tricked out with kitchen, solar panels, Wi-Fi, couch, like everything, man. Just have it be like an actual base. And then I guess I would, now that I know it exists, get Heather's 3 monitor thing for my laptop, have battery power. I mean, this thing's got 4-wheel drive. It's not like it's like crazy off-roading, but it probably could go on a muddy construction road and not get stuck like an actual transit van. Then if you tricked it out with all the water and everything else, then, you know, it's got a heater. It's got everything you need for all the different weather conditions you'd be in. And it's a van, right? So I live in the Bay Area. You want to armor that thing because people are going to smash in and try to steal all your stuff. So definitely we would want to have like smash proof windshield and windows and stuff like that for when someone tries to smash in. But the other thing that I wish was super functional and I know is not functional, but just looks really rad is the new Volkswagen ID Buzz. The thing looks so cool, dude. It looks like it's like a mix between like an old throwback Volkswagen bus / a modernized Scooby-Doo mystery machine versus, you know, it just looks totally awesome. And when you watch the videos, like it's got all the tech hookups. And personally, I still think that the minivan is the best archaeology vehicle. Yeah. I mean, it's better on fuel. You can fit more people comfortably. There's a million like infotainment hookups for everyone who's riding. They can charge all their stuff. It's really comfortable for tall people like me. There's tons of legroom, tons of headroom. So I've always been on the kind of minivan. I used to have a Toyota Sienna, and that's when I realized that it's so functional for archaeology. It's crazy. So the minivan thing, like I've been on the van bandwagon for a while, and this thing just looks sweet. Its range sucks. It's super expensive. It's an EV too. So I don't know how functional any of that stuff is for archaeology, but it looks rad.
Right. Yeah, dude, I remember when we did our car day here and I'm like, oh, I'm the car guy. Look at me. But then when you came up with the Toyota van for CRM, I was like, damn it. That's such a good idea. It's such a good idea. So while I'm looking like a cliche tool in my Toyota Land Cruiser, Bill is comfortable, relaxed with the awesome van. So good.
Quintessential dad. Yep. It's just the dad on the road, a dad.
But it's killer. It's killer. Oh, I just want to say one other thing about backpacks. I have the pain of Bill. I'm tall as well. And I have found that I think the Arc'teryx company, you know, it looks like Archaeopteryx, but that company of backpacks, they have large versions of some of their backpacks too. At least they used to, where you can.
No, they still do. And they're super expensive, but rad. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Those are rad.
Yeah.
So what I would love for somebody to buy me or for just to give me a handful of cash and get whatever I want. I think, and I'm going to go the vehicle route, but it's not going to be a new vehicle. This is, I have a truck and I'm going to trick out the truck. So,
right.
Genius.
I love, and because some people just love, they love their trucks, but then they don't come with all the tricks and everything. Yeah. And so you're swapping out the vehicle you like for the extras. So for me, there's some amazing truck toppers out there that have various different purposes. And there's one in particular They're called True Excursion, T-R-U with an X and then Cursion. And they, it's like, it's amazing. All these little, you know, areas, and they have like a ramp that has wheels on it so that you can push things up easier. Like they show, so pushing up a generator, those things are heavy, right? So getting them up into a bed is hard, but these things you could, it could just be at work, you know, purpose, or they actually have ones where you can sleep in it, but it's not just a sleeper. So, you know, people, they're out there, they have these vans. It's almost like a toy camper where everything goes up to the side. Your, all your like sleeping and kitchen and things like that are up against the side, and then you can put in your toys. And in our case, our toys are work and field equipment. So I think that's one thing. It's, you know, not everybody's going to want that. But if you're somebody who really likes to have your supplies and exactly, you work well by having your own field equipment, and at the same time, you really do want to have a comfortable place to sleep and have everything organized well, I think that's a good option. Another option, if you're not intending on sleeping in the truck at all, are these drawers that can go in the bed. So you still have the full bed capabilities. You definitely want a camper top. You got to have a top for your bed. Didn't have to be a camper, but a top for your bed, because the worst thing is having an open bed and then having to haul everything into the hotel room. So a top for your camper or for your truck would be good. Those drawers, because I don't know, it doesn't matter how organized and the best system you think you've got for putting everything in the truck, it's still a pain in the neck. You got to pull everything out to get what you want, and you have to crawl into the truck. So anything that can help you with that, and those drawers that are kind of, they're a little, they're shallow, but they pull out. They're very sturdy. Have you guys seen them? They're all metal and they go in the base of the bed of the truck. Have you guys seen those?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I have.
And you pull them out, and then you can, they have like these containers where you can pull them out of the drawer. So there's these containers that are set and organized in the drawer. You pull the drawer out and then you have everything organized. Man, that would be amazing. I would love that. I actually personally do not have a truck that I own myself, because we have all these fleet trucks and it's kind of silly.
Yeah.
But if I was an as needed or somebody that, you know, wanted to be able to drive my own truck, to me, that's a big one. I want to get them for our company. So I think we're getting a little, we're getting a little long in this segment, so I'd like us to do one more, like rapid fire, what's a cool, kitschy gift to give your favorite archaeologist?
Right. Okay, I got one. It's not kitschy at all. My every year, I got to say, a AAA membership, a membership for the American Automobile Association. Sweet. It's so good.
Yep, totally. Sure. I'll say monographed Yeti water bottle.
Oh, right.
All the gymnastics girls that my daughter's team, they all want them, and they're all getting them and stuff. And I figured that is rad. It would be cool to have your name on your water bottle.
Yeah. That's great. Mine will be something that my husband gave me last year, which was a huge hit. It's probably the best gift he's ever given me. A bobblehead of myself.
Oh, of yourself.
That's like a total vanity gift.
Sweet.
I'm telling you, he sent in a picture, and I will send you, because not all the bobbleheads are the same, but this company, if people look at it, they cannot believe it. I think I sent you a picture, Andrew.
I think it was in your, did you have it in your office?
I did.
I showed it to you.
It is like me. It's so crazy. And they take a picture, and so they basically make the bobblehead, and it's not just your head. It's the entire outfit. So, and it wasn't that much, and it's really a fun thing, especially if you're, you know, an egomaniac like myself or Andrew. It's always nice to have your own bobblehead. So, well, for all of our listeners out there, we wish you all a wonderful and merry Christmas. We hope that you get your heart's desires and that you have all your loved ones around you, whether it be fellow archaeologists, friends, family. But you just enjoy some time off, and we wish you a very Merry Christmas. Thank you for
Merry
listening.
Christmas.
Yay, Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.arcpodnet.com/CRM Arc Podcast. Please comment and share anywhere you see the show. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or just email chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Support the show and the network at arcpodnet.com/members. Get some swag and extra content while you're there. Send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about. The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.